Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream my show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. I grew up on a tobacco farm in Southern Virginia in the 1970s and 80s. My grandparents, who raised me, owned about 120 acres of land where they built a house, had livestock, and a huge vegetable garden. As a child, I spent my summers working in the fields and listening to the conversations the grown-ups were having. I got quite an earful. I know that farming is hard, but also gratifying work. So this hour, I'm taking a look at what it's like to be a farmer of color in Minnesota. A history of discriminatory practices and persistent barriers have contributed to fewer farmers of color pursuing the occupation. But there have also been more efforts recently to reduce disparities and bring more farmers of color into the industry. In Minnesota, roughly 99% of farmers are white. There are only 39 black farmers in the whole state. That's according to the last state agriculture census. Now, as I talk about this with some farmers this hour and one of the assistant ag commissioners for the state, I want to hear from you, too. The phone lines are open. Are you a farmer of color? What has your experience been in Minnesota agriculture? Are you a person of color who's interested in farming, but you have questions about it? How to get started? Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, that number is 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Let me bring in our guest. We have with us Patrice Bailey. Patrice is an assistant commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. He oversees outreach as well as agricultural marketing and development, dairy and meat inspection, and food and feed safety. And Patrice also works closely with farmers of color in addressing barriers they encounter. Good morning to you, Patrice.
Good morning.
Hi, looking forward to hearing from you.
Yes, I'm just really happy to be here.
We also have on the line Jansen Hang, and Jansen is the executive director and co-founder of the Hmong American Farmers Association. His parents have a farm in Vermilion Township, and he grew up farming in Rosemount. Hi, Jansen.
Hello, Angela.
Hi, good to hear from you as well. Also on the
line, we
have Naima Dore. And Naima is the executive director of the Somali American Farmers Association and the owner of Naima's Farm, which is based in South Minneapolis. Good morning to you, Naima.
Good morning.
All right, so I'll start with you, Patrice. In the introduction, I noted about 99% of farmers in Minnesota are white. Now, that number does not reflect the racial diversity of Minnesota's population, which is now about 79% white. So you're there at the Ag Department. Why is farming so overwhelmingly white here in Minnesota?
That's a very good question. I'm trying to see where to start. Well, Many of the reasons that that statistic is there is mostly because of the barriers that many of our BIPOC farmers actually face in regards to land, financial aspects. Information is another issue that a lot of people are faced with. And if you're thinking about the average age of a farmer in Minnesota is 56 years old, you have a lot of people that are, or baby boomers that are going to retire. And now this had this huge emergence of BIPOC farmers that are trying to get in. So there's lots of different entry ways that need to be explored that haven't been explored in the past as well as we're doing right now. So that number 39 is basically based on the ag census that was done in 2017. There's another ag census that would be in 2022 that I'm hoping that that number would be exponentially higher than 39 black farmers in the state. But it really depends on who you ask.
You know, my colleague, NPR News reporter Dan Gunderson, he did a story last month about this most recent farm census data that identified 39 black farmers in Minnesota. But that is among nearly 69,000 farms. And that report also showed about 1,200 farmers of color are operating here in the state, and most of them run small operations. And so, Patrice, as you talk with them, do they talk a lot about the lack of access to land? Because in order to grow things, you got to have land.
You got to have land. Many of the farmers that I've spoken to of color, land is definitely the number one barrier. You have many farmers that are renting land, but not owning land. And that's the sort of that's where the disparity lies. If you're thinking about 68,000 farms that cover 25.5 million acres, many of those farms are not owned or operated by people of color or women entrepreneurs of color either. So that that trend is starting to change, but it needs to change a lot faster than it has been in the past.
And tell me about this. Is there a huge difference with regards to credit and access to credit between what white farmers have and what people of color have?
Well, that's a very good question. We had in April, the end of April, there was a lawsuit that was filed entitled White Midwestern Farmers Seek Government Loan Forgiveness. And this was basically based on the American Rescue Plan Act that will provide the $5 billion in debt relief assistance to our black farmers. And so, you know, when it comes to credit, it really depends on the lender. You know, if you have a relationship with the lender and it's a positive one, your application seems to be a lot more accepted than if you are a person of color and trying to get land. That's where a lot of disparities happen to come in terms of where the barriers are, and people are oftentimes denied, or the process is strung out so long that people run out of money.
So I should note that this month, the USDA, they will start offering that debt relief to black farmers and other farmers of color, as you mentioned. It is part of that American Rescue Plan, which set aside $4 billion to forgive loans for farmers of color. And I want to make sure our listeners know that earlier today, my colleague Carrie Miller talked about this USDA debt relief plan and what it means for farmers of color on her show. And I would encourage you to listen to that conversation at nprnews.org or search for Carrie's program wherever you get your podcast. But I want to know, how much do you think this will actually help farmers of color in Minnesota, Patrice?
I think that this will help farmers of color in a huge way. It's almost as if you're thinking about the 40 acres and the mule promise of yesteryear, where that promise hasn't been realized until right now. And so I think it would allow opportunities for more people to be able to have opportunities to entry into agriculture in Minnesota, but it also would allow communities that we normally are not in, such as North Minneapolis, communities of color, where regardless of the zip code, are not familiar with these terms of agriculture. So that is something that we are pushing really hard to make sure that everyone is seen, regardless of where they are in the process.
Well, let's turn to our two farmers we have on the line with us. Naima, you are a Somali-American certified organic farmer here in Minnesota. Tell us about where you are farming and what you're growing.
So currently I'm farming in South Minneapolis, mainly working with the elders and growing berries of leafy greens that are native to East Africa.
Oh, like what kind specifically, leafy greens?
So currently I'm testing out Ethiopian kale, as well as I'm growing cowpea. Surprisingly, I'm experimenting peanuts right now, watermelon as well, corn, and just so many other things that are growing in the garden.
Oh, it sounds beautiful. I wish I could see some photos of that. You started farming with your family in 2016. So why did you start to do this? Why did you want to start, you know, farming here in Minnesota?
Yeah, initially when we started growing at Big River Farms, formerly known as Minnesota Food Association in 2016, it wasn't really to get into farming. It was just mainly to grow food for myself and my family and feed fresh produce to my children. Mm. And that's how we started.
And then how did you make this transition into, like, I can go bigger than this? Why did you want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just, you know, it reminds me back home. I mean, we would get our vegetables and fruits daily and we would, consume it fresh every day. And so when I made the connection and I said, wow, I can definitely, you know, grow a lot and make business out of it. But the reality is, and the truth is, that's just not, farming doesn't pay the bills. So I still continue to work my day job while I grow my business and as well as expand the nonprofit that I established last year to get young farmers, particularly, you know, East African farmers to explore agriculture.
So we heard the Assistant Ag Commissioner, Patrice Bailey, mention that one of the big barriers for emerging farmers is access to land. So what has that been like for you to try to find land to grow your crops?
Yeah, you know, especially crops that are native to my country, it's you really want to find a land that will cover your needs in terms of different varieties that I'm trying to bring to market. This process has been really a challenge for me. I had two failed purchase agreement. I applied with the USDA direct loan, and while I was approved the second time, the appraisal came back low. So for that, I was not able to finalize that purchase agreement, you know. Between all of that, you know, it's really a difficult process if you don't understand the language in terms of the resource and how to navigate that. And so for me, it's been a great experience. But at the same time, you know, as a business person, I'm losing, my CSA, for example. I established a really strong connection with many people over the years. And so it's been a difficult process, but I'm hopeful. I'm having a conversation with a couple of people right now, and I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing where it goes with that. So,
and Naima, you started the Somali American Farmers Association just last year. What was going on? Why did you do that? And what are you doing as far as trying to help other Somali farmers, you know, grow more crops?
Yeah, like I said, you know, a lot of the things that I'm trying to do this time around, it's really focused on bringing something new to the market. Like I said, you know, bringing culturally specific produce that the elders are familiar with. And so last year, you know, I grew a lot of vegetables and donated directly to my community and to the elders. And that's something that I'm committed to doing. I'm also committed to getting young people involved in farming and explore that. A lot right now, you know, my main focus is really working with the elders. When I make a connection with an elder person from the community, it just takes me back to my childhood. You know, many of us had a lot of our vegetables grow in our home garden. And so that connection and reclaiming our food, it's something that I'm really passionate about.
Jansen, your parents are farmers and you grew up farming in Rosemount. What did your family farm?
So what do we farm, Angela, you mentioned?
Yeah, when you were growing up, what was your experience growing up farming in Rosemount?
Oh, yeah. No, so, you know, my parents immigrated to the States in the late 70s. And the reason why we started farming, because my parents have always instilled in us that the key to success in the United States is through an education. So my parents picked up farming here. More so, we were picking pickles for getting a large picking cucumber, large picking company here in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
So we started with that as a way to earn income, family income here, because my father was the only one working to pay for our private school tuitions here. And then over the course of the years, my parents decided to transition from, you know, picking cucumbers to, you know, mixed vegetable productions as they got assimilated with the farmers market system. So currently right now, we grow just a vast variety of mixed vegetable productions here.
So, Jansen, tell me, what were some of the barriers that your family encountered as immigrant farmers? What are some of the stories that you remember your parents talking about when you were younger?
Wow. There's a whole list, Angela. I mean, that's a great question. There's a whole list, you know, from land access. It's critical. One, you know, is that without land tenure, and also consistency, you know, there's always an uncertainty of whether, you know, your farm business operation is going to be operating that year or not, right? The other thing is the lack of resources to trainings and markets. And those are the biggest barriers. And it needs to say, it's not that my parents didn't know how to farm. It was always part of the cultural tradition of being Hmong here, that you grew up farming. It has been a tradition that passed on from generation to generations here. But the biggest thing is that it's a different world. It's not Laos. Different climate, different type of soil textures. Back in Laos, my parents, when they tell the stories of that, it was always about farming. It was all about sheep cultivations, right, and slash and burn. You can't do that openly in this country here. You're fixed to a certain plot of land here. So land access is critical. That's the biggest thing. I noticed that, you know, resources, trainings, is also critical that my parents have always expressed to us. And at that one time in the early 90s here, the University of Minnesota Extension started a program to support, you know, BIPOCs. Unfortunately, it did not continue as it was intended to. But my parents were completely thrilled that there was some kind of training to support Hmong farmers on, you know, best practices to growing produce in Minnesota.
And so, Jansen, as the director of the Hmong American Farmers Association, I understand that you all did some research and you found that Hmong farmers on average here in Minnesota only earn about 2/3 of what white farmers make. So what is that about? Why is that?
Yeah, so, you know, in this research that was completed by our executive director, Mayor Tisser, Patu, she had did a number of interviews as well as longitudinal studies that was conducted with Hmong farmers here, especially in the Minneapolis-St. Paul farmers market, because Hmong farmers, as you are aware, Angela, makes up a large population of vendors in both these main markets, right?
The farmers markets.
Hmong farmers makes up, yeah. So Hmong farmers actually makes up like over 50% of the vendors in both these main farmers markets. Mm-hmm. Right? And we want to kind of, she wants to, you know, kind of assess, like, okay, what are the challenges, opportunities that are faced by Hmong farmers here? And what she learned is that one is clearly is the lack of access to land. You know, it's about equitable access coming up. So lack of access to land, lack of access to market beside the farmers market system, lack of access to training, lack of access to research, as well as lack of access to financial assistance or farm business management. And those are the five key areas. And so those is what we found out. And then in doing this longitudinal, we're asking them, like, okay, what was the income that farmers were generating, right? And what we found out is that, you know, Hmong farmers on average are making about $5,000 an acre. While compared to the main mixed vegetable or main Caucasian mainstream mixed vegetable producers, they're averaging about $8,000 to as much as $20,000 per acre, right? And this is all because of, you know, lack of equitable access to these resources.
Mm. And Commissioner Bailey, Patrice, you were talking earlier about there's a change coming. You were saying that the average age of a farmer in Minnesota is 56, and you all are sort of tracking of what is to come, that because some of these families are deciding we're not going to do this anymore. And so what is going to happen with the land?
Well, that's what we're trying to assess right now. We have a program called FarmLink. And FarmLink is sort of like a Craigslist for this, at least that's how I like to call it, a Craigslist for if you have land, I need land. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to introduce more emerging farmers into this particular program so that we can match different emerging farmers based on the needs that they have on the type of land that they're looking for. And this isn't just for the metro. This is also for rural areas as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the experiences of farmers of color in Minnesota, and I want to hear from you. Are you a farmer of color? What has your experience been like in Minnesota agriculture? Or are you a person of color who is interested in farming, but you have questions about it? Call us at 651-227-6000. Right now, let's take a phone call from Northeast Iowa. We have Gay on the line. Good morning to you, Gay.
Hey there.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your situation? Are you a farmer?
Hey, Nasima. Yes. Well, what I was going to speak about was that after attending the Upper Midwest Organic Farm Conference for like 20 years, in 2020, Leah Penniman, author of Farming While Black, a Creole woman from the East Coast, came and gave our keynote address. And I'm also a Creole woman in the Orisha tradition, so I got to welcome, to open for her to welcome. And how proud I was that all of these, a couple thousand people got up and sang to call in our African ancestors in Yoruba, right? This was a very wonderful, Nasima was there. We met, there were indigenous women, Native American women, farmers who were there for the first time after dealing with so much oppression in the cultural oppression, right? In the agriculture, the culture of agriculture is so white. They don't even think about this, but the number of times I was dressed down at that conference for, oh, you're not dancing correctly or stuff like that. To the other, think of white culture and going out into Northeast Iowa or Southeast Minnesota and seeing all these Trump signs on the farms everywhere. It's very difficult to break in. But anyway, I plowed the lower bottom field with three little halflingers. I'm very much a proponent of horsepower on farms.
And Gabe, what are you growing? What kind of crops do you have on your farm there in Northeast Iowa?
Medicinals is a big focus for me, like astragalus, medicinals, immune adaptogens that can help us with this pandemic, as well as food. Okay, just food, corn and beans, I mean, lima beans and greens and, you know, everything, right? And primarily, I've been farming for years. I've been to the USDA number of times. I always get turned down like that. They won't ever give you any money to grow medicinals, for instance, because they never heard of it. If you're not doing corn and soybeans and beef cattle, you don't exist. So it is the culture of agriculture that seriously needs to change. But the only way we can change it is for more BIPOC people to get involved and have access and have training.
That's Gay in Northeast Iowa. And I want to ask you, Patrice Bailey, one of the assistant commissioners at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. You know, what you've been doing listening sessions across the state. I think you did this in 2019 before the pandemic, you know, prevented us from getting together. What did you hear in those listening sessions from farmers of color?
You know, a lot of what Gay is talking about is exactly right on. If you're growing anything, for the most part, that's not traditional corn and soybean, and you're growing something that's indigenous to your homeland, there is a side of a siloing out that prevents people from actually having community. A lot of the barriers that we saw from Crookston all the way down to Rochester were similar around land and finances or lack thereof, but also school loans was a actual barrier for people to actually get land and qualify for equity and financial help. So there is a lot of issues around mental health, around being seen or being overlooked was another barrier that we saw from Crookston all the way down to even St. Cloud, that was kind of pervasive when it came to people of color trying to break into this particular field.
Right now, we're talking about farming and what it's like if you are a person of color and farming in Minnesota. Did you know that roughly 99% of Minnesota's farmers are white and there are only 39 black farmers in the whole state? That's among nearly 69,000 farms. Farm Census data also shows that about 1,200 farmers of color operate in our state, and most run small operations. On the line, we have three guests. Patrice Bailey, he is an assistant commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. We also have Jansen Hang with us, and Jansen is the executive director and co-founder of the Hmong American Farmers Association. And we're also talking to Naima Dore, who is the executive director of the Somali American Farmers Association and the owner of Naima's Farm based in Minneapolis. And taking your phone calls, the number is 651-227-6000. And right now, let's take a phone call in Cambridge. We've got Moses on the phone. Good morning to you, Moses.
Good morning. Hi, Angela.
Hi. What did you want to share with us as we talk about farming and being a person of color here in Minnesota?
Being an immigrant from Kenya, I really wanted to farm. So in 2007, I found a farm training school called Bigua Farms, and I started training on how to grow different crops. I also learned how to keep records, and eventually I used these records to obtain a USDA loan and got a 20 acres in Cambridge, Minnesota.
That's great. So tell me the type of vegetables that you grow, and where do you sell the vegetables that you grow?
I grow just about all the vegetables that you can find in a farmer's market, from tomatoes to carrots and all that. And I sell in Mill City Farmer's Market, Kingfield, and Fulton. Those are in Minneapolis.
And Moses, what can you tell me? What has made it difficult or what has made it easier to do this work of a farmer here in Minnesota?
As an immigrant, it's a little challenging because you really don't have a network of other farmers that you fall on for support. And also you don't have, financial resources. So, you put more, hours into your work. Mm-hmm. Language is also a factor, even though you speak, but, it's still... you speak English in your own language. So mm-hmm. it's, besides that, it takes a long time, patience to, do this. And, you have to just take time and, keep doing it. I used to work at night, and then come sleep a little bit of, 2-3 hours and, get up, go, train or try to farm, and then go back at night. And I did that for many years before eventually.
And so Moses, you farmed back in Kenya, so you had skills, like you knew what you were doing, but you needed training once you arrived here, right? So tell me, did that training program that you went through, was that helpful for you?
Yes, it was helpful for the most part because, weather is different, language is different, just the culture, Back Kenya, you don't, apply for a market. You just show up, mm-hmm. your things on the ground. But here you have to do things differently.
Right.
So it was helpful, yeah.
Thank you. That's Moses calling in. And Naima, I know that you do training and you try to work with groups who are interested in farming. And tell me who you're working with and how that's going.
Yeah, so our program is really tailored to the elders to freely do what they want to do during our growing season, whether it's storytelling or just being part of the process wherever I'm at, wherever I'm farming each year. In addition to that, the youth participate and learn the process of growing. I mentioned earlier I started my family and I just specifically were just interested in growing food for ourselves. But watching my two boys at a young age hold a seed and put it in the ground and just watch the process all the way to the harvest, it's a beautiful thing. So a lot of youth participate in our program. But right now, because of land issue, I can't get so many people that have expressed interest in farming to participate. So in the past, I would refer them to the training program that I did myself with Big River Farms, and along with my husband, and try to collaborate with organizations with a bigger resource and infrastructure. But the goal is really to find a permanent space for SAFA and my business as well, so that I could continue to support the individuals that I've been working with one-on-one that shadow with me. But I can't give them a comprehensive farming opportunity and experience in a way that it fits our needs and our culture and farming practices. Mm.
And Patrice, what can you tell us about training opportunities that are available now, or the lack of training opportunities for the number of people who might be interested?
Well, I would definitely have to say it's the latter. Working with Naima and Moses and also Jansen, since they are all working group members, it's definitely been a great opportunity for those who are doing training to be able to collaborate together as a network. One of the things that we've been working with Central Lakes Community College is with Keith Olander, is working with hopefully Metro State or another particular school in the Metro to actually bring a farm business management program to the Metro so that we can have more access to the training that is needed in order to keep prosperity for emerging farmers in regards to keeping their capital in the black.
Let's take another phone call. In Lakeville, Cyrus is on the phone. And Cyrus, did you have a question or what did you want to share with us about farming?
Yes, thank you very much. It's not so much a question about farming, but how I could support those who do. I have always practiced going with CSAs and local farm markets. Is there a resource that individuals such as myself and others who are very focused on supporting the community and our brothers and sisters of color, that we may find where they are at and how we can support them both financially as well as within the community that we serve? Thank you.
Thanks. That's Cyrus in Lakeville. He wants to know, how can he support a farmer of color, particularly people who have memberships in CSAs? How can you connect with those? Patrice?
Well, one of the things that that there's a connection is also through our Emerging Farmer Working Group, in which we have quite a few emerging farmers that sit on that particular group and are looking for these, these opportunities to support CSAs. The other thing is that through the department, we also have various programs that also support CSAs as well. But we're looking for any support that anyone would like to give to support emerging farmers in any way possible, both financial as well as training-wise.
And I have a question for you, Jansen Hong there with the Hmong Jansen Hang, excuse me, with the Hmong American Farmers Association. You know, we've done stories in the last few months about Asian hate crimes. And I'm just curious, among the Hmong farmers who have shared stories with you, do they talk about discriminations or just problems that they've had in interactions with people, particularly at these farmers markets where they are very visible?
No, actually, they're good questions there. You know, of course, you know, we know Asian hate crimes are definitely on the rise and everything else. Very thankful that our farmers have not experienced any sort of direct impact as a result of Asian hate crime. But definitely when this came about here, they were extremely concerned. It's like, wow, considering the fact that should I go sell the farmers market or should I not, because they were completely open. On top of that here, it wasn't just the Asian hate crime, it's this whole notion of COVID. Am I going to get COVID as well, too? You know, many of them has kind of shared experience that they personally have not encountered, but they have shared stories where they have family members who, and you guys probably have heard too, Angela, who decides to go take a run or a walk at the local lakes here and been attacked by others as well, too. So this is definitely a concern. The good thing is that, you know, we have some great farmers market managers who's constantly looking at all aspects here, not just for COVID protocol, but also, you know, any potential issues that may interfere or have an impact on their vendors as well, too. So that's something that I would say that we are very fortunate so far. Then again, you know, Hafa, we don't work with all the Hmong farmers here. We work with about 100 Hmong farmers here, and according to our members here, they have not shared any stories that have been directly related to any sort of anti-hate crimes.
I'm glad to hear that. And Naima, what about you as the executive director of the Somali American Farmers Association? Have some of the farmers that you've talked with, have they shared stories of discrimination with you?
I think the theme for me that I've been hearing from others is similar to, for example, in my case, you know, with the USDA process of applying loan, taking a longer time than normal, and just being, you know, impatient with the process too, because like I said, you know, one of the biggest barriers is really understanding the system as a whole. There's issues of trying to navigate and trying to get things done in a timely manner, especially when you're dealing with a purchase similar to mine. Everything requires things to be done in a timely manner for you to finish and finalize your purchase. So I think that's a frustration that many BIPOC farmers that I talk to, whether it's challenges around the loan and really finding resources when you need it to even start your operation. Like I remember one year I didn't have access to equipment. And so for me to do the work that I am passionate about, it was a setback. So, and that's across all BIPOC farmers, whether it's finding the capital, finding the resources in terms of the equipment and supplies that they need, whether they're doing, you know, a community garden or small-scale farming.
Let's take another phone call in Farmington. We've got Dee on the phone. And Dee, as we talk about farming and farmers of color, what did you want to add to the conversation?
Good morning, Angela. My question is, I always wanted to start farming, and my dad and I have been talking about it. And we don't know where the land access is. We don't know how to get that. And also, we don't know how much to initiate, you know, doing the business, like a farming business. Those are my biggest two questions all the time.
Do you have experience farming, Dee? Have you done farming in the past, and where?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we've been doing like all kind of different kind of farming back home in Ethiopia. We're from Ethiopia, we've like all kind of vegetables and crops, and you know, we have a lot of experience for that.
All right, that's Dee in Farmington, and then Patrice, I'll have you respond to Dee. Dee's got experience farming back in Ethiopia, and you know, earlier we talked about the land access issue. So, how does somebody get started if they've got the experience and the heart and the drive to do it? How do you get started?
Well, everyone has their own point of entry to agriculture, and I would say to give me a call at 651-238-4523 so that I can point you in the right direction to get you started in regards to getting into agriculture. So please give me a call at that that number.
All right. Well, we'll make that information available on our website at nprnews.org on the webpage for this show as people want to reach out. And Patrice, I do want to go back to what we said earlier, that the average Minnesota farmer right now is getting closer to retirement age. And so what do you think that could mean for the future of farming here in Minnesota? Because we are hearing stories of people who have experience and passion for it.
I am extremely hopeful, and I'm looking at those demographics in regards to farmers that are actually going to retire, that will open up a emergence of emerging farmers to be able to take advantage of the type of land that is needed for their particular business. What was really interesting around COVID was that a lot of emerging farmers had to be really creative in terms of direct marketing and e-commerce in order to reach their customer base. And as the baby boomers are retiring, I totally see a lot more BIPOC farmers of color to be able to fill those spots.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about farming and farmers of color in New Brighton. We have Nick on the phone. Good morning, Nick. What did you want to share with us?
Hi there.
Hi.
So I believe the BIPOC community has often been the victim of the war on drugs, especially in Minnesota. I was wondering if your guest could speak on the opportunity presented by potential legalization of marijuana and how Minnesota could use that opportunity to create more equity in the agriculture industry.
All right, that's Nick in New Brighton, who's asking about legalizing marijuana. And if that became the situation here in our state, what would that mean for farmers, particularly BIPOC farmers? Is there an opportunity there? Patrice?
That's a good question. I would definitely have to get back to Nick on that. That's something that I would have to talk to Nick specifically about.
Well, let me ask our guest, Naima, have you heard any of the farmers that you interact with express interest in growing marijuana?
No, but I would say more so hemp. And that's something that I'm researching now and learning the process to that and how I can get my license. But not particularly marijuana.
All right. And Jansen, what about you?
Yeah, no, definitely. Marijuana production is a great conversation, especially in the monk community as well, too. You know, been farming for so many years in the special production that they want to have a shift. Because it seems like marijuana production is, you know, financially just more viable, right? It's sustainable than mixed vegetable production. The biggest challenge that they're concerned about is, you know, will they have the opportunity to access markets like that? Or will they be given to the large egg, like big corporations here, where these small eggs may not have the opportunity to dive in? And so this is definitely a conversation that, you know, HAFA, as we work with Hmong farmers, you know, we're always constantly advocating for, you know, equitable access, not just for Hmong farmers, but also by BIPOC communities. So these are conversations that we will be having with, of course, with the colleagues, Assistant Commissioner Peterson, as Commissioner Peterson, as well as Assistant Commissioner Bailey as well on these conversations.
Let's take another phone call in Afton. We've got Joel on the phone. And Joel, thank you for waiting. What did you want to share with us?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was curious. I've been writing notes, but here's my main question. Is there a strong motivation or an eagerness for farmers, BIPOC farmers, to move west of the Twin Cities? I grew up west of the Twin Cities. There's lots of smaller acreage farms out that way. Is that something that the groups have discussed, or is that a process that's already starting?
So looking at other places to farm, locations. Patrice?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joel. I cut you off. What did you want to say?
Oh, I was just saying somewhere other than the metro area, because the land prices around the metro area are so high. And it sounds like, you know, that land accessibility and then the financial piece of getting started, maybe it's a little less if you go west.
All right. Patrice, what are you hearing about that? Exploring other parts of the state, rural counties, are there better or more opportunities there for land access?
We could definitely get more of bang for your buck if you leave the metro and say go to, for instance, Pine County, and you're able to get a good price for, say, 40 acres or more. But the issue on the other side happens to be of, if I want to grow something other than the what's traditional, corn and soybean, how is that going to be more receptive? But also, if you have a family, you also have to be incorporating that as well in terms of how to acclimate yourself to the community.
Because culturally, you would be leaving your, right? You'd be leaving a community that maybe you have, you know, other people of color that are close to you. And if you go to Absolutely. A more rural county, it's a very different way of life for those families.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Let's take another phone call. And Richfield, David's on the phone. And David, what did you want to share with us?
Hi. I direct the St. Paul Farmers Market, and I'm also the board president of the Minnesota Farmers Market Association. And I just wanted to comment on how proud I am to work with Hoffa and Jansen and the Hmong farmers and other farmers of color. The emergence of Hmong farmers in farmers markets have really revitalized and kept the farmers markets alive through the 80s and 90s and now into this new millennium. I look forward to welcoming all farmers of color, and especially like now that the emergence of more Eastern African farmers into Minnesota, and we really look forward to incorporating them into our markets.
And, you know, David, for me as a consumer, it seems to me that the farmers of color, particularly the Hmong farmers, they really have revitalized the farmers markets across the metro area for sure.
Sure. Yeah. And like Jansen mentioned that, 50% of our produce growers are Hmong farmers, and they just really have bolstered our rosters and really kept the farmers markets vital.
Thank you. That's David in Richfield. And as we talk about the future of farmers, Patrice, how important is it to get young people into farming? Because there's an opportunity there as well. What is the state doing to make farming attractive and interesting to students right now?
That's an excellent question. One of the things I was doing pre-COVID was actually going into the schools and talking to students about agriculture, because I believe that students can't be what they can't see. So I wanted to be able to sort of give them a real-time picture that there are people of color at the ag department and agriculture, and that knowing where your food comes from is critical. So the younger that we can to get people, more young people into this particular field, the better.
And what would be the next steps for the State Department of Agriculture to support BIPOC farmers right now? What are you all working on?
Well, one of the things we're working on, we want to get through this legislative period, but one of the things is really to reach out more to emerging farmers, not just with the working group, but also to meet people where they are and be able to sort of do a one-to-one campaign about what the services that we have at NDA are available and ways in which people can actually engage and actually get into agriculture. And the other thing I was going to say about the hemp program is that the license period is now closed, unfortunately. But, if there's more questions about that, I can funnel those to other mm-hmm. other commissioners there. But that's what we're doing.
All right. Well, Patrice, and to all of our guests, thank you for giving us your time to give us a look inside the lives of farmers of color here in Minnesota. Our guest today, Patrice Bailey, an assistant commissioner in the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Jansen Hang, the executive director of the and co-founder of the Hmong American Farmers Association, and Naima Dore, the executive director of the Somali American Farmers Association and the owner of Naima's Farm. This conversation today was produced by NPR's Samantha Matsumoto. Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. If you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.